Thank you for listening to this podcast brought to you by the Center for Christian Music Studies at Baylor University. This podcast was recorded at the 2013 Alleluia Conference. For more information about Alleluia, visit us online at www.baylor.edu/Alleluia.
This session is on care of the vocal instrument, and we'll talk some about technique, which also goes to caring for the instrument as well. But basically, what's the major difference between singers and instrumentalists?
Our bodies are our instrument.
Our bodies are our instrument, right. And so with that comes the, it's a wonderful gift, but it's also the grave responsibility sometimes, right? So our voices are affected by our emotions, by the amount of sleep we have, by our health, our general health, affected by the weather sometimes, you know. And so we have to be extra cognizant of what it takes. First of all, I would say it's important to know your own instrument. Some people have very delicate instruments, and some people have, I'm convinced, steel belted radial tires for vocal folds, you know, and can withstand just about anything. I fall in the first category, and so I, you know, always have to be very, very careful to make sure that I'm aware, mostly, of what's going on. But you know, we don't have the luxury of putting our instrument in a case and carrying it away, and so we do have to take extra care with that. If you notice on your handout, I have listed for you some of the most common problems with the voice, and these usually stem from one of the following factors that I've listed here: the insufficient hydration, not enough liquids, an overly dry environment, certain medications, acid reflux, habitual throat clearing or coughing, excessive loudness or amount of talking or singing, habitually speaking or singing too high or too low, outside of one's natural range, and insufficient breath management. So I want to go ahead and kind of talk about each of these things one at a time. Hydration is basically mucus management. You know, you can't be around singers very long without the topic turning to mucus. That's just the way it is. And so in order for our instrument to be responding correctly and behaving correctly, we need a thin layer of mucus. If that mucus gets too dry, then it will thicken, and then we start to have problems. So just as with any kind of ongoing health issue, it really has to become habitual, just a part of your lifestyle to drink water. There's nothing better than water. A lot of people think that it's sufficient to drink a bottle of water 2 hours before the performance, and that's going to do it. But that's not the case. It helps, but you want to be hydrating as a part of your life, because it's really a matter of having all the tissues and everything well hydrated, not just your throat in that one moment. Likewise, there are some liquids that can be drying. Caffeine and alcohol are two that stand out immediately. So it doesn't mean you have to give up your morning cup of coffee, but if you're going to drink that morning cup of coffee, be sure then that you have enough water to kind of balance that out through the day. People have asked me before if one's better than the other, whether you have water that's chilled or room temperature or hot water. I think that's a personal preference. It's really just about keeping yourself hydrated. So nothing in excess on the caffeine or the alcohol, especially if you've got a lot of singing coming up. You just try to abstain as much as possible and drink that water. Environmental factors. If you start to pay attention to your environment, and just think when you lie down to go to sleep, think about, is there air blowing on my face? Or when you're sitting at your computer, do you have air actually blowing right on your face? Remember, the mouth and the nose are the pathways to the larynx. And so, just as if you had a leak in your ceiling and the carpet was wet and you put a fan on it, it would dry it out, right? And so a fan blowing air, moving air on our face toward our mouth and nose, it's also very, very drying. So sleeping under a ceiling fan, even having an air conditioning or heating vent blowing on you during the night, all of those things, just start to be aware that that could be drying as well. And see if you can redirect that air to where it's not blowing right on your face. Heaters, gas heaters are another big culprit. These heaters are actually taking the air and passing it across a flame to heat it. So that's really, really dry heat. And so again, just be aware of what the heating system is in the building where you spend most of your time and see if you can combat that. A wonderful, inexpensive little tool is a humidifier. Not even better than a humidifier, what am I trying to say? Yeah, because it will keep the, vaporizer is the other one, and I think a humidifier is better. It's cool air, the vaporizer is the warm air again, and so, or warm moisture, and so the cool moisture from the humidifier is better. The one caution about that, be sure to have a small one that you actually clean out after every use, because the danger is mold. You know, if the water is sitting there for very long and then you're breathing in mold and you've created a whole different problem for yourself. One of the most drying environments ever is the airplane. Really, really dry. Have you ever noticed how you feel after you get off of a plane? I've known a lot of professional singers I've known will actually bring a washcloth from home, and when they're on the plane, they'll wet the cloth and just lay it over their face, especially if they're going to be sleeping or whatever on the plane. I tried that recently on a trip, on a flight to Europe, because I was going to have to sing pretty quickly after I got off the plane, just in just a day or two. And it really helped, but I was amazed at how quickly that washcloth dried out. I mean, really quickly, you know, so I was constantly getting up and re-wetting the washcloth. But that is, I mean, I know you might look a little silly, but gosh, is this the first time that as singers we've looked silly? I don't think so. So, you know, so that is a good solution, maybe. Another common cause of drying is the use of antihistamines. So we create a vicious cycle for ourselves. We feel like we have congestion, so we take an antihistamine to help with that. Well, the antihistamine is drying out the mucus, making it thicker, making you more congested. So it ends up being a vicious cycle, if at all possible, as singers. And I know sometimes you're just so miserable that, you know, you don't care. You have to do something, to take something. If possible, try to avoid antihistamines. The better choice is to take something like Mucinex, which is, it's going to thin out the mucus and get it moving, whereas the antihistamine is drying it up, thickening it, and keeping it in there, which then, I think, you know, causes infections. I have to do a little confession moment here. I'm addicted now to my neti pot. Do you all know what a neti pot is? Mm-hmm. I use every morning and every night, whether I'm healthy or sick. I must. I just have to. I cannot stand to not do that. Okay, for those of you who don't know, a neti pot, mine looks like a little Aladdin's lamp, and you get these pre-mixed packages of saline solution, and pour it in there in a little warm water. You're not supposed to use tap water. It's supposed to be distilled water or something that you've boiled and gotten all the bacteria out of. And then you put the nozzle in one nostril and tilt your head. I hold my breath like I'm underwater, and you just let that water wash through, blow it out of your nose, put it in the other, and let it wash through, and it just washes through those sinuses. And like I said, I do it every morning and every night, and since I've been doing that, I have not had an upper respiratory infection. I have not had one. So I think that it doesn't stay around long enough to get infected. You know, I've just got it moving through. So I would say try not to take anything that's going to make that mucus thicken and hang in there. Some medications that I recommend, here in Central Texas, we have so many allergens. I don't know, and you know, everybody feels that way where you live. And I guess there are different allergens in different areas, but one of the prescription medications that the otolaryngologist here in town really highly recommends is Singulair, S-I-N-G-U-L-A-I-R. That is one of the least drying medications, and I do take one of those every night. So I don't take it right before I'm going to be using my voice in the day. I have the night to sleep it off, but again, I try to drink a lot of water. But that tends to keep my allergies sort of leveled and not bothering me, so I recommend that. Some over-the-counter things, airborne, things like that, that to help prevent if you know you're around people who are, sometimes it seems like up here we've been hit by the plague, you know, everybody's coughing and hacking all at the same time, and so I put an airborne tablet in my water bottle and just guzzle it all day, you know, to try to keep all of that at bay. And then Zicam, I think Zicam's a good preventative as well. But the number one over-the-counter thing that I recommend is Mucinex. Really, really great stuff. All right, another problematic area for when we talk about voice problems is acid reflux. We're seeing so much more of this nowadays than we did before. And certainly it has to do with our diets and our lifestyle. But some of the symptoms that might kind of clue you in that acid reflux is a possibility is if you're just hoarse, kind of inexplicably hoarse all the time, or if you have a chronic cough, or if you even feel like you have to clear your throat frequently, sometimes, especially in the morning, that can be a real sign of that. If you have pain or a sensation of having, it feels like you have a lump in your throat, that can be another sign of acid reflux. Heartburn sensations, a biggie, that's pretty obvious. Bad, bitter, or even tinny metallic taste in your mouth, especially first thing in the morning, can be a sign. If you are singing on a regular basis and you're very familiar with your voice and you notice, along with some of these other symptoms, a decrease in your high range, it could be acid reflux, because if your vocal folds are swollen, the edges aren't going to meet as thinly, and so you can't get into your high voice as easily. Basically, what's happening with acid reflux is the stomach acids are backing up through your esophagus and into that larynx, and the tissues in your larynx are not built to withstand that. You know, the stomach lining is very, very strong, so that it can stand up to that acid, but our larynx is not. And so it can literally burn, the stomach acid can literally burn through the esophagus and get to those vocal folds. And so it can be very, very bad. I had a friend once who went to the otolaryngologist after months of problems, and he was just horrified. He said her vocal folds look like hamburger meat, raw hamburger meat. You know, mm-hmm. It's just bright, bright red and clearly very damaged. And so you can do a lot of damage if you don't get that treated pretty quickly. And also some cases of throat cancer have been diagnosed from acid reflux that went untreated. Some causes of acid reflux would be stress. Isn't stress a cause for everything? Certain foods like fruit juices, extremely spicy food, tomato-based food, things to be careful of would be what time of day do you eat? I mean, I teach at a college. you know, they're eating pizza at 2 a.m., and then that's what they have to do. They've been busy and studying, and they're hungry, and pizza's the only thing they can get to. But it's not a good idea for singers. And so I have to just, you know, think a little bit more in advance about what's going to be needed as far as their diet and their health. Fatty foods, as in most fast foods, can be problematic. Caffeine, again, chocolate. Peppermint, interestingly enough, because peppermint actually weakens the sphincter between the esophagus and the stomach. And so if that sphincter isn't closing as much, then that acid can back up. So peppermint is also a culprit. And nicotine. Smoking absolutely loosens that sphincter as well. So some things to do if you're diagnosed with acid reflux. I've heard of people putting a 2x4 between their mattress and their box springs to just slightly elevate the mattress just a little bit, so, you know, things are flowing down still. But again, mostly it has to do with choosing which foods to eat and what time of day to eat. You know, so, Okay, the next problem is habitual throat clearing or coughing. Do any of you experience that yourselves or know of anybody? I mean, it's habitual. You aren't really even aware of it sometimes if that's the case. But I noticed this summer one of my students would be vocalizing and she'd go, ooh, 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 and she was clearing her throat after every scale. I've been teaching her for 2 years and I had not ever noticed it before. So either it was just now coming to the front of my radar, which is entirely possible, or this is a new habit for her. And she was absolutely unaware that she was doing it. So if you feel that tickle, it's irresistible. It's almost impossible not to clear your throat, right? But it's one of the very, very worst things that we can do, and especially the habitual kind and outright coughing. Terrible. It's the worst thing that you can do for your throat. So have some remedies. If you feel like you just have that irresistible urge that you have to clear your throat, take a really big swig of water and swallow as hard as you can. What that does is it brings the ventricular folds together, and it clears off that that phlegm and helps you to kind of avoid that urge for right then. Keep throat lozenges, vitamin C tablets close by, especially if you're getting over a cold. Again, water, water, water. That's the best solution. Also, you can massage your larynx, starting right under your chin and rubbing downward in a pretty firm motion, and that will help to, you know, any kind of itching, tickling feeling inside, that'll help you with that. But if you have a cough, don't let it go untreated. Yeah, the handouts are the yellow back there on the, you know. Don't let it go untreated, because that really is one of the very worst things for your voice. And a cough that goes on can result in vocal nodules and, you know, all sorts of problems. Do you know what vocal nodules are? Mm-hmm. They're like calluses on your vocal folds. So just like you might get a callus on your finger, and if your vocal folds are needing to meet cleanly and all of a sudden there's this callus in there keeping them from meeting, then it can come across as a really a hoarse sound, a cheerleader voice. You know any cheerleaders and the way they speak, and it's, you know, they probably have nodules. Nodules are not as terrifying as, you know, we used to think of them. I don't ever want anyone to tell me that I have nodes, but still, they're a callus. And so the treatment for that would be to, first of all, figure out what caused it, because you can go on 6 months of vocal rest, which is excessive, but you can go on 6 weeks of vocal rest, and the nodule can be gone, and then you get right back into the behaviors that you were doing before, and all of a sudden they're back. So that's the first thing, and then maybe having to change some of your habits. Okay. Another problem for us as users of our voice would be excessive loudness or amount of talking and singing. Really, this is a lifestyle thing. If you feel like this could be the reason why you're experiencing vocal fatigue, just take a look at your life. You know, maybe you're single, live alone, not using your voice a lot at nighttime, but you work on Wall Street and you're screaming out, you know, whatever it is they scream out. I know nothing about that. I don't know why I used it as an example. but they're yelling all day at their jobs, right? Or maybe a word processor. He's at his computer all day long and not ever using his voice, but he coaches his son's little league team on the weekend and is yelling then. You know, so figuring out what it might be that would be causing this. Talking in loud environments. I mean, I walk out of a restaurant and I go, oh, wow. And I didn't even realize, you know, but I'm just talking over that noise for so long, and then you kind of, you know, you're exhausted the next time. I always find after the first week back, after a holiday, I come in and go, first of all, I forgot how exhausting this is. And secondly, my voice is so tired, you know, and so it's kind of building the stamina back up too, and remembering, you know, how to use your voice correctly if you talk all day. In the voice studio, I'm one-on-one, but then I teach a diction class, and it's a very different way of using my voice. How do you all use your voices? Are you, most of you, up in front of a choir, in front of a classroom? Give me some examples. Nods. Classroom.
Mm-hmm. Choir.
Yeah. Other other
dance studio.
Yeah. Okay, so you're talking over music, talking over other people talking, trying to get their attention. I taught an opera workshop one time, and, you know, in that sort of class, you're trying to encourage them to be gregarious. You want them to come out of themselves, but then they'd be so out of themselves that I couldn't get them quiet when I needed to talk. So I just took a coaching whistle, and I had one that was an ex-Marine. He goes, okay, but every time you blow that thing, I might drop down and give you 50. You know, they're just conditioned, you know. Okay, another possible reason for vocal fatigue or vocal damage would be habitually speaking or singing outside of one's natural range. So those of you who are dealing with choirs, you know, how many times do you hear the soprano choir director singing along with the basses, you know? And it's irresistible sometimes. I mean, it's the quickest way to get a result. But over time, is not doing your own voice any favors. So see if there are other options. Is there a way to play it on the piano, sing it up an octave, change the key entirely and sing it in a range that's comfortable for you if you're demonstrating rhythm or diction or something like that. And I also think after a while, you know, demonstrating all the time is not necessarily the best teaching method anyway. But be aware of that. We do it without even really, really thinking about that we do. But how many of you know what your optimum speech pitch is? Because, you know, anybody ever wonder about whether you're speaking too high or too low? Yeah. Well, I'm going to tell you how to find your optimum speech pitch. But you have to go against something I already told you not to ever do. The best way to find your optimum pitch for speaking is to clear your throat. I know, but just don't make a habit of it. Okay, so if I go, okay, so that's about it right there. So that's a little bit higher than I've been talking to you all. I tend to talk a little bit too low, and certainly when I'm tired, it gets lower and lower because I'm supporting it less and less. But that throat clear, and then kind of find where the pitch is. Everybody try it for just a So then you just find where that was, yeah, and try to keep it right there for your... but might not be your legitimate throat clear either. Yeah. So you have to just, if you were unconscious about the throat clear, then where was that? Yeah. And then you do it again and try to make it feel. I have to go by sensation. But anyway, that's probably the best way to find what your optimum speaking pitch is. All of us as teachers and choir directors need to do ourselves the favor of warming up our own voice. And boy, I need to practice what I preach. There are so many days that I'm just, you know, throwing on my makeup and racing out the door, and the last thing I'm thinking about is my voice, and I'm about to teach 6 hours of voice lessons, for Pete's sake. Now, I don't sing at them, and I try not to sing with them or whatever, but still, you know, occasionally there is a moment for demonstration or even just that I'm talking all day long, and it goes so much better if I'll plan my time accordingly to warm up my own voice. So I really recommend that you do that. Do you have questions about warm-ups, about how to go about that? Anybody? Do you know where your middle range of your voice is, kind of basically where your speaking range is? I recommend whatever your voice type that you start in your middle range, a really comfortable speaking range. So for most women, that would be D major. So A, right above middle C, and just a major, wow, this is out of tune, and the five-note descending scale, and then down, not half step, okay? Then maybe up, but not any further up than the D, the next D up there. And stay there for a while, and everything's descending, and do forward and back vowels, and just get really, really comfortable, get the airflow going. Mostly it has to do with your body energy. Mm-hmm. I find if I work out before I practice. You know, if I've got a recital coming up and I need to sing through the recital every day, the only way that's going to happen is if I do it first thing in the morning.
it won't work. If I've taught all day, forget it. I'm shot, you know. So I have to do it at, I have to be singing through that recital starting at like 7 a.m., you know. So I've got to get my body awake, first of all, so I'm on the elliptical or whatever it takes to get going. And then it's not hard to warm up the voice. So it's really more about moving and body energy, I think, even than getting those vocal folds together. But whatever your vocal range is, so guys, you know, most men are of the baritone persuasion, so I would do exactly the same thing, an octave down. So D major, starting on that A below middle C, and down by half steps, on a nice O vowel at first, and then alternating forward and back vowels. Then you start working out to the outer edges of the range, but only after you really feel warm and that middle voice is going. And then I think that's true for everybody, and I would recommend that you warm up your choirs that way as well. Okay, are there any questions about care of the voice or anything that we've talked about so far? Yes, ma'am.
About how long should you do that warm-up session? I'm sure it would vary.
It does. It varies, and it varies even, you know, for me on day to day. I mean, if I got 2 hours less sleep the night before, it's going to take me a little longer, you know. If my body is more sluggish, it's going to take me longer. So it really, I mean, that's one of the biggest challenges about being a singer, is because that instrument is going to be different every day. Yeah. So it's another thing of just getting to know yourself. You know, I have kind of a standard routine. In fact, I warm up my students as well. I ask them to come to their lessons warmed up. But I also go through some vocal eases with them to kind of line the voice up and to work on some technical things. And I'm so in the routine of doing these exercises with them that then when I start on my own training, you know, I'm not good about doing it every single day, but if I've got a recital coming up or something and I'm getting really into my daily practice sessions, one time I was sitting at the piano and said, okay, now on E, and I was all by myself in my house because I was so used to saying it out loud to the students standing next to me, and you know, you start looking for the candid camera just making sure that yeah. So, but I do have this routine, but then I find that some mornings, if it's not, or some practice sessions, if it's not happening as quickly as normal, I might just go back and do the first several exercises again before I go into the high voice, you know. But some days it's like, wow, I was already warmed up, you know. And it depends on how awake and energized I am and how much I've been singing in the days preceding that is sort of now, you know, the muscles are remembering. So,
thank you.
Okay, well, I would like to spend kind of the rest of our time in talking about breath management for singing. I think it really all boils down to that from a technique standpoint. And then I'd like to take any questions that you all have about, you know, that are particular to your situations. So, the breath management technique that I teach and that most American voice teachers teach, is called appoggio. And that stems from the Italian verb appoggiare, which means to lean. This was the technique taught by the Italian bel canto school, and so most American voice teachers teach this. American singers are the best trained singers in the world, and that's no exaggeration. Very, very true. And almost without fail, every American teacher that you talk to will say that they teach appoggio. So I feel pretty safe in passing it along to you. There are different breath management techniques for sure, but this is the one that that makes the most sense to me and that I think has been the most successful, certainly for me and my students and for, obviously, most of my colleagues. Okay, so the idea about appoggio, if we think about breathing logically, what's happening? I mean, your air is coming in, your body is expanding, air is going out, your body is collapsing, right? Inhale, exhale, that's a normal breath cycle. So when we're sound asleep, I mean, we're breathing still. It's an unconscious act for us most of the time. Is singing a normal breath cycle? No. What is different?
Takes about 8 times more air.
Takes about 8 times more air. In what way? What is let's break it down. Let's talk about the inhalation portion of it. So if you were unconsciously breathing, if you're sound asleep and you're inhaling, is there anything different about your inhalation?
Is it more shallow? Or?
I don't think necessarily. The thing that might be different would be the speed required, like if you're singing a fast song and you need to take a quicker breath, you know. But as far as the way the musculature responds, I don't think it's different on the inhalation portion of it. And, you know, one of the ways that you can get singers to immediately find what it's like in their body to take in a good breath is have them lie down flat on the floor, yeah, and maybe put something, a hymnal on them or something, you know. It's hard to do when you're dealing with a whole choir, but it's something that you could recommend that they try on their own. But anyway, what actually is happening when we take in that air?
Being pushed down and our lungs are
lungs expanding. Are expanding. Yeah. What's on the outside of the lungs?
Ribs.
Okay, yeah. So you're taking that air in through your mouth and nose. The rib cage is expanding. The lungs are also expanding and they're being pulled down. A wonderful image is when the flight attendant says pull down on the tabs on the vest and it will inflate. That's really what our lungs are doing, you know. It's not really like blowing up a balloon. A vacuum is being created and the air comes rushing in because of this opening. The lungs are attached to the ribs, they're attached to the spine, they're attached to the diaphragm, and so all of this is kind of opening them and creating a vacuum and the air comes in. Where's your diaphragm? Yay, y'all are smart. Most people will say you want to take a good breath from your diaphragm. Well, it's logical that when they take a good diaphragmatic breath, they feel a really low expansion. So that's not completely out there, but your diaphragm is actually very high in your body. It's an upside down bowl-shaped muscle, and it is attached underneath your ribs. So your lowest rib is here, right? And that rib cage curves around, so that diaphragm is sitting this high in your body, okay? So when you take in the air, the diaphragm is attached to the ribs, and it opens out and it flattens, okay? So that's what you were talking about, that it comes down, okay? So it flattens a little bit. Now what happens when that diaphragm flattens? It
pushes your guts out.
It pushes your guts out. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in there, you know? I mean, a lot of stuff. You got your small intestine, your large intestine, your colon, your stomach, your liver, your kidneys, you know, all of your abdominal organs shift. Every single thing in your abdomen shifts when you take a good diaphragmatic breath. So our job then is to get out of the way of that, to release those abdominal muscles so that that shift can happen in the most relaxed manner. That's why, you know, when you're asleep, it certainly can. All of a sudden, then when you stand up and you say, take a good breath, you know, and it's all wrong somehow. We've forgotten our instincts. Well, I want to show y'all a little exercise to help you get a good low breath. And this is a great one to do with your choir or your class. How many of you have heard of the Alexander technique? So great, a lot of you. So Alexander technique deals with body alignment, posture, finding the most balanced and relaxed position for your body in a dynamic way while you're playing your instrument or while you're singing. So this position is one of the Alexander technique positions, and it is called the monkey. I don't know why, because we don't actually, you know, slouch over, but that's what it's called. All right, so we're going to stand with our feet about shoulder width apart. And I want you to be very aware, and guys, this is harder for y'all for some reason. Y'all are built differently than us. But I want you to be aware of the natural arch in your back, okay? And I want you to make sure that you keep it. Guys tend to, when they bend their knees, they tend to tilt their pelvis under. Try that for me. Everybody just tilt your pelvis. And what do you feel here? Yeah, exactly. You're not going to be able to release those abdominal muscles with your pelvis tilted. So keep the natural arch in your back, and then just bend your knees. Just drop down, okay? Now take in a breath for me. Yeah, there's some really good low breaths happening there. For some reason, this works for, I've never met anyone this hasn't worked for. And it really, it helps you just to release all the way down to the bottom of that torso and really find a nice relaxed breath. But you must keep the arch in your back. Now try it in, down and with your knees bent. Now tilt your pelvis. Now take a breath. I know. Look, I might suffocate. Yeah, I mean, it's like nowhere, it can't go anywhere, right? So that is, and it does happen with men more. And we understand that, you know, women's pelvises are different because we're supposed to be birthing babies. But, you know, so there's something about the way y'all are built, it's harder for you not to do that. So just be very aware of it. All right, have a seat.
No.
Actually, just stay there.
Out.
Well, yeah, you can go too
Don't
far.
Go the
it's
way.
The natural arch to the back. Yeah, not any more, not any less. Yeah, but for guys, sometimes I do say stick your bottom out because they're just, you know, it feels natural to. I mean, how many guys do you see go like this? I don't know what that is. What is that? Stand up for me again, please. Okay, so some exercises to help. Well, actually, sit down. I'll get you up again in a second. All right, so that is the inhalation. Now, you know, even if I had found up there in my evening gown being the only one on stage, man, sometimes I just drop down in the monkey, you know, and no one really notices. And I've got my colleague, Randy Umstead, who's a tenor on the faculty here, he just, you know, he's got a high note coming up, you know, and I mean, he just drops and no one cares because it's a glorious sound. So I think it's really easy to do that as a member of a choir, you know, and if you've got high schoolers that are going through the Allstate process, I'm like, you're behind a screen. Do what you got to do. You know, nobody's going to see you. So it's a good technique for most people. All right, so that's the inhalation. Now, the exhalation. Is this part of a normal breath cycle? The way we exhale to sing. No, mm-hmm. Not really at all. So we had expand, collapse in our normal breath cycle. What do we not want to do while we're singing?
Collapse.
Yeah. So this is the normal cycle, and so eventually you will lose the battle. Eventually the body will collapse and you have to take in more air. I tell people don't fight this. You're going to lose the battle, so just don't fight it. But we want to delay it as long as possible in a very relaxed and elastic manner, okay? So we've gotten all this nice low drop there. I use analogies of things like trampoline, rubber band, those exercise bands, anything that's elastic. It's good if you find for yourself and for your students, are they a kinesthetic learner? Are they aural? You know, and sometimes you just put a rubber band in a person's hand, and it's all of a sudden, oh, I get it. You know, so you might have various approaches, even for a choir. I mean, it doesn't take much to hand out those big rubber bands. You know, and get people thinking about their bodies in a very elastic way, because we think it's gonna collapse, so I gotta keep it open. Well, you're gonna hear that in the sound, right? And so it's all about feeling like you're on a trampoline or open, keeping it open and elastic. Okay, so there are some exercises to help with this. Now I'm gonna ask you to stand up again. So we are going to get ourselves back in the monkey. So remember, you're keeping the natural arch in your back. Now what I want you to do is take in a nice relaxed breath, just. And you're going to use the air on that S, okay? And as you're using it, I'm going to talk to you. You might take your hands in front of you and take them down and out. So you're telling your muscles, open, open, open. Not in and up. You don't want them coming in and up, okay? So your muscles will follow along with the direction of your hands, okay? So down and out with your... And so you're just keeping this open for as long as you can. When you get to the end of your air, you simply... open your body again. Don't think about taking air in. Just let everything drop and open again, and that vacuum is created and the air comes back in. Okay? So let's try it. Here we go. Good. So you're just going to control this. Stay open, 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 open. Good. No anxiety about it. Get to the end of it. Take another breath. We're all different sizes. Our lungs are different sizes, so our breath capacity is different as well. Good. Exactly. So, great. So, one of the things that you want to develop then is the coordination and the strength. It's really more about coordination of keeping your chest open while all of this is happening. and now women, this is, seems to be harder for us, upper body strength issues. But a lot of people, the minute they start using their air, that chest collapses down. Well, then, you know, you're having to lift weights every single time you breathe, first of all, in the course of the song. But also your abdominal muscles cannot respond appropriately in that case either. Okay, so let's try another little exercise to help you find the muscles that keep those ribs out. All right, I'm going to do, it's a 5-count exercise, okay? So I'm going to ask you to inhale to a count of five. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Then I'm gonna ask you to suspend. So it's almost like you're holding your breath, but I don't want a lot of tension in that holding. You're just suspending the air for a count of five, and then you'll use for a count of five. On a S sound again. Okay. All right. So into your monkey. All right. Ready. Inhale. 2, 3, 4, 5. Suspend. 2, 3, 4, 5. Exhale. 2, 3, 4, 5. So we're gonna do that again. But were you aware? Did you feel some muscles engage? Really, right at the base of your pecs. The muscles engaged that kept those ribs out. And that's really what has to happen the whole time you're singing if you want your abdominal muscles to respond appropriately, okay? So the controlled inhale is an interesting thing too, isn't it? We don't often need that in singing, but I think it makes you more aware. Here we go. Inhale, 2, 3, 4, 5. Suspend, 2, 3, 4, 5. 2, 3, 4, 5, or until you're empty. Yeah, see how much air you have? Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Good, all right, have a seat. Now, I wish we do have time, and you are kind of a small group. Back row, come up here. I want to, I'm gonna have every one of you at some point come up here and help me demonstrate this. All right, so we're going to do what's called the flip the piano exercise, okay? All right, normally I have people get behind on the straight edge there, but we're not going to try to move this piano, so we're going to use this edge. Now, it's going to be as if you were literally going to be trying to lift the piano. I don't want anybody to hurt themselves, okay? But if you really were seriously going to lift the piano, you would get your knees under it, right? And you'd bend your knees. Now, look at my body. You see that I have the natural arch in my back and that my torso is straight, okay? And now by having just a little bit of resistance for my hands as if I were going to lift this piano, I've engaged these muscles, okay? So even with, you know, if you try the suspend exercise and everything and it's not quite happening, man, this does it immediately for everybody. It's terrific, okay? But they have to be lined up correctly. All right, so you want to try first? So you get like you're really under it. There you go, and keep that natural arch. Now, feel a little bit of resistance, and you feel how open your chest, you're automatically in that suspended thing. Now just go, ha, 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 ha. Feel how your abdominal muscles engage, right, without you having to do anything about it, because your chest is out. Exactly, wonderful. So, you don't have to tuck anything, you don't have to think about anything that you're doing with your abdomen, it just responded exactly like I was supposed to because this was in the right place, right? Great. Okay, your turn. So you're getting under it like you really, okay, and there he is. Okay, there you go. Now just a little bit of resistance with your hands and go, hey, hey.
Hey, hey, hey.
You feel that really low abdominal engagement? Yeah, great. All right. Your turn. And we're going to do them one row at a time. I just want everybody to feel this. You're getting under it like you really are going to lift it. So you're not bending over. Yeah, get your knees bent and underneath it. Yeah. Okay. All right, so a little bit of tug from your hands. All right. Hey, 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 hey. You feel really low, abdominal. Great.
Thank you.
That's what I'm wanting you to be aware of. Next row.
Could you demonstrate with some singing?
Sure. Can try first?
Sure.
Okay. And I mean, you're welcome to sing too if you wanna feel it. Okay, so you're gonna get under it like you really are gonna lift that puppy. There you go. Great. Good position. Okay. So a little bit of resistance in your hands. Now, hey, hey. You feel a low abdominal engagement? Yeah.
Exactly. Okay.
Is there one vowel sound better when you're doing that for male or female? Doesn't matter.
And in fact, whatever your happy vowel is, just go with it. Okay, so there you go. So really under, like you're gonna lift it. Okay, now a little bit of resistance in your hands. I'm seeing you collapse a little bit there. Are you really lifting? Yeah. There you go. Did you feel an even lower abdominal thing? Yeah, I'm seeing it here on you. I don't know that you're. Chest
I'm probably
is
still
open.
Engaged in driving. When I walked in, I just arrived from Houston.
Would you try something for me and see if you can arch your back just a little more than you're doing? So really, your chest is really open. There we go. Now, that was lower. You can hear the core in the sounds a little bit more there. You hear it, there's a different color.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. So because without it, it was all and all of a sudden there's. Just had had all of it. You had your whole color spectrum then.
Yeah.
Good. All right. So under it, like you're really gonna lift it. Okay. And you're. Yep. Okay, yeah. But now don't lean back. Here you go. So your chest. There you go. All right. Now. Hey.
Hey.
Uh-huh. Do you feel low abdominal? I see your chest kind of collapsing a little bit. Can you? Really, there you go.
Hey.
I'm not sure your alignment was there. Let's see. Okay, so let me make sure that your legs are really under it. Yeah, so what you're doing is you're leaning back. So can you make sure that you're really lined up with the floor? And seriously try to lift that piano. Okay, now do it.
Hey.
Yeah, I see your chest actually collapse. Are you going to be the first person this doesn't work for? What's your name? I think we're not completely lined up like we want to be. I'll think about it a little bit more and see if I can come up with a different way. Okay. All right. So really, as if you were going to lift the piano. Arched and that chest. No, yeah. See, I think also maybe your legs are a little bit too far in. Okay. Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah. You feel that?
Yeah. It's
yeah.
Right here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Good.
It's right here.
Good. Okay. Next row. My trumpet player, my pianist. They're like, why do I need to know this?
My name is Joel McDowell.
Your voice. All right.
Yeah, that was good. I did that last time.
So get your. There you go. All right, now try.
Hey.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's good.
So I need your back arched a little bit. No. Yeah. There you go.
Hey. Mm-hmm.
Good. Good. I can feel it in your back too. Nope. Not under.
Not under.
Yes. So stick your bottom out. Sometimes you just have to say stick your bottom out.
Hey.
Oh, yeah, you're being shy. Hey. Yeah, as if your best friend, where are you from?
Arlington.
Okay, so there's someone in Arlington that you have not seen your whole life, and they're walking across the street, and if you don't get their attention right now, you're not going to, it'll be 20 more years before you see them. Hey! Okay.
Hey.
Oh, maybe. No. All right, try it again.
Hey.
I feel a little bit.
No.
You're kind of shy. Are you a singer?
No, I'm a pianist.
Uh-huh. I think if you'll let yourself kind of go for it, 'cause you're lined up correctly, but you're still being a little bit cautious with your voice in front of us. All right, good. Thank you. And you too on the front row.
You wanna go?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Hey.
Okay, so same thing. Really, how open can your chest be?
Yes. Hey.
That was different.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yep, so open your chest. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good.
Is that how you do it?
Uh-huh.
Hey.
Mm-hmm. Can you do it a little bit higher, a little bit louder?
Hey. Okay, should I? Hey.
Uh-huh.
Hey!
you wanted me to demonstrate with some
singing? Or like a vocal warm up?
Okay. Well, I'll try to do an unsupported one and a supported one. Is that what you want?
Yeah.
So just ca. I'm not really engaged, but ca. You see,
yeah.
You just hear the different. There's more color.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can tell immediately if somebody's really using the core of their voice, and this works for everyone except. So we'll try to figure that. I think we had you kind of leaning back. It was the problem. Any questions? Is there anything that you encounter in your? We have about 5 minutes. Anything that you encounter in your work, either in your own voice or with your group? That I can help you with, yes, sir.
How do you help women with a lot of heavy bravado? I mean, I know breath is an important part of that.
Yeah.
How do you, what do you recommend?
Well, you know, the elasticity in the muscles, it just starts to go away, you know. And so I have several people in my life that they're going to, they've promised me they're going to say, you know, and somebody should have said that to Barry Manilow. Y'all see him July 4th in Washington? Oh, really? Somebody needed to not have allowed that to happen. And I was a big fan. But I think that it all comes down back to support. And this is going to sound strange, but just keeping it simple, keeping it more focused, really a lot more with the articulators. Again, find out kind of what, if you're dealing with someone that imagery works with them. I like to talk about, you know, a traffic cone, and it's turned on its side, and the base of the cone is here, and this is where the resonance is, but all of that focus and energy is out there in that point of that cone. And really visualizing just sending those words through the point of that cone. If they are a kinesthetic person, you might have them just do this while they're singing. You know, keeping something moving and energized and focused, because they've just kind of let it get loose and wappy, you know, and so it needs to be faster moving air and a lot more focus in the whole production, you know, but that has to start from the breath.
I know for my choir, I have several older people, and I just try and start with some slower breath exercises, warm-ups, just to help them do that instead of the something quicker, even though they've been up and about all day, you know.
Yeah, but even in the slow stuff, thinking of the subdivisions, instead of thinking in whole notes, you know, thinking in how many 16th notes worth of breath is that. There's always this motion under there. The image of the swan that you've all heard, you know, it's gliding smoothly on top of the water. What's happening underneath the water? Yeah, and that has to be happening for us as singers all the time. I think that, you know, yes, this is the gas pedal in the car. This is where the energy is starting. But when it comes to trying to avoid the wappies, I really think it works better for me and for my students if we're really visualizing out here, you know, and lots of energy in actual, you know, what's coming out into the room.
Sometimes I draw a bullseye on the board and send it to the bullseye.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Giving them a direction and a focus accomplishes both of those.
Along those lines, how do you deal with flat or sharp singing kind of on individual basis, I guess, but affects your choir? Sure.
Most people don't have a problem with their ear. If you have intonation problems, it's usually at a registration place, you know. So probably a lot of, what, can you give me a voice type of somebody that tends to have a?
You know, in my ladies section, really, sopranos especially, anytime we go above a C or a D. But the heavy vibrato is a big part of that.
Right. Okay, so above C or D, you're in the passaggio. Yeah, so D sharp, E, F sharp is the place where it has to be focused. It needs a lot faster breath energy because they're transitioning into head voice. They have to be in head voice by G. There's no other choice. I really advocate for all voice types, female, that they start thinking about making a transition even as low as B flat on the staff. That is the mezzo spot. But even high sopranos, if they start making an adjustment there into head, then it will help with the tuning. If they wait until D sharp, it's oftentimes too late.
How do you describe that to them, head voice, as far as, is it an exercise or just a...
Yeah, I think a great exercise for really all voice types for finding head voice is using a K, because what articulators are involved with a K? The back of your tongue and your soft palate, right? And that's right where your head voice resonance has to be. We get worried about talking about back space because we think retracted tongue and low back space and wobble. But head voice is high back space, and I mean it is, it's back. And so by trying to keep the head voice too far forward, we can also get into trouble. So I will do a So they're always starting on the top, and they start with a ka, and without really any jaw involved, and they put the vowel right where that K was, and you can do it on forward vowels too, key, K, or whatever. But that K helps them find that height, and if you're starting with the top and you're going top down, then so they're not carrying any weight up. Yeah, that's a good one to help them find the sensation of it. So I was just working with a gentleman this morning, and he had a lot of ascending moments in his songs, and so he was carrying weight up, and so instead I started from the top, and then we would match when he, because he found that every time. So then we would sing ka or the k before whatever vowel, so he had the word I don't know. I just would like of any word that he had. Let's say he had I don't know. Somebody say a word.
Articulate.
So car, car, and so he would go car. Key, and then he'd sing it up, and just make it feel the same. And so we started with the ka, then started with the k before the appropriate vowel, whatever the vowel was in the word, then actually put the word there. Then we would sing the phrase and sing, I can articulate or whatever, yeah, and do the ka first before the word to keep continuing to find that nice high spot.
Why do sopranos always sharpen on like the D?
They don't always.
I mean,
sometimes.
Often.
Well, I mean, I know a lot of them that flat there.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a register transition, and that is the entire challenge of singing, especially with the classical technique, because, you know, we're wanting it to sound like all one register, and really we're needing to go, we can't just go black to white, we have to blend through gray through there to get that to all sound the same, and that's the challenge. And so really it's not just sopranos, but it's more noticeable with sopranos because it's higher and louder usually. No? Any other questions? All right. Well, I've enjoyed my time with you. Yes,
I
ma'am. Yes.
We don't have time today, but towards tomorrow. Is getting our baritones to understand that G to middle C is a typical place for them to sing, and it is not too high. Even to D, maybe to E flat or E. But those are typical, and I keep working on that, and
well, again, I think I would build their confidence by doing a lot of top-down stuff. Usually when I do the ka key exercise, I'll go, well, that was a really great A-flat. What? You know, they had no idea they had an A-flat. Mm-hmm. They didn't carry any weight up, and so now they're like, wow, I can sing an A-flat. And then it's not, you know. So you just kind of have to build some confidence in.
So if you're doing that exercise with them, where would you start?
Again, I would maybe right at the same sort of place or just a little bit above. So if I was doing this exercise with a baritone, I would go ahead and start on the A. The A right below middle C.
Okay.
And then up by half steps until, you know, it's until they go into that, and then stop, stop, because that's not what you want. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Hmm.
You were saying to start with A for the baritone.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the whole choir practice together? I mean, the women's and men.
It's pretty safe to start D major with everybody, and then you could just say, if you're going up by half steps, just say altos and basses drop out at a certain point. Again, that's going to be different for everybody, and I think that the enormous challenge for you all, the choir directors, and I bow to you in this, is how do you know what's really going on with all of them? I mean, it's not, you know, you aren't hearing them one at a time. And so I think you have to watch and maybe listen to them in small groups. But the telltale sign, for especially for men, is this. I mean, the minute that head comes out of alignment, stop. You know, they need to first of all get that lined up and realize what this is. But this is the natural inclination for an untrained singer, especially male.